What I want to do in our time that's remaining is I want to address our graduates really with the sermon. And I know that Marjorie read a passage that is somewhat familiar in Genesis chapter 4. But Genesis chapter 4 is part of the major narrative of the book of Genesis. And so in Genesis 1, what we see in Genesis 1 is that a creator creates creation. And it's seen as delightful, pleasing, where everything fits. And this, the way the creator creates, it's not coercion. It's not by bullying things. It's no battle with evil. It's something as easy as if just calling out a rhythmic, harmonious world from confusion, from voids. And it's seen as an endless act of a self-giving God. And there's only one part in Genesis chapter 1, at least that first description of beginnings, that describe humanity. Humanity's part of this creation, and what separates humanity from other parts is that humanity is considered to be very good. And then the narrative moves into chapter 2, where it describes creation in relational terms, and just as in Genesis 1, humanity is seen as something very good, in Genesis chapter 2, they're seen as naked and not ashamed. And that describes their true sense of self. There's no shame in relationship with God. There's no shame in relationship with other people. And to some degree, this is like their spiritual birthright. This is their home. This is their sense of true self. And that's the first word of this narrative of Genesis. The second word moves into Genesis chapter 3, still part of this whole creation story. But now this God-given yearning that exists inside of people, which is a yearning for connection with God, a yearning for connection with other people, to be in harmony, it's altered. Because what happened in Genesis 3 is people seek to meet that yearning, but just meet it through an altered way. Self-centeredness, self-interest, and what stems from that are degrees of brokenness. Now, you can, some degree, the rest of the book of Genesis, those two factors are always at play. A yearning for connection and wholeness with God, a yearning for connection and wholeness with other people, but how to meet that yearning, either through ways that have been given by God or to meet it through means of self-interest and self-centeredness. And so those two are always at play. Now we move into the passage that Marjorie read, Genesis chapter 4. It's again part of this large narrative. And so the narrative further unfolds to where we have an introduction between two people, or two new people, Cain and Abel. And like their parents, the focus of their story is on relationships. Their relationship with God, their relationship with each other. And like the other parts of Genesis, what we don't get often in the story is all the answers that we seek. Because for the writer of Genesis, the function of the story is what's most important, not every single detail. But what we do receive, it is important. It's very important. What we do know is that Eve conceived two sons, Cain, and we have a description with Cain, with the help of God, I have produced a man. And then, you know what it says about his brother Abel? Oh yeah, she had a second son too, his name is Abel. So how many of you are second born or further down the line? That's right, go ahead, I'm familiar with that. So all of us Abel folks, we understand what it's like for someone else to get all the story, right? And in the ancient world, that's normally how it goes. Firstborn is always the priority, at least over secondborn, but not so much in the book of Genesis. Think of Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, Esau, Joseph, and his other brothers. Often in the book of Genesis, secondborn is the priority. We do know at least some level that they are given a description by what they do, their vocation. Abel, the tender of, he cares for animals. Cain, a farmer. And we don't know if that's the root of their problem. It could be maybe, if you know anything about those who own cattle and those who farm, as long as you got a really good fence, everything's okay. But if the fence breaks down, then most of the time the animals will find their way over to the farms, and that can create a very bad work relationship. But we don't know if that's it or not. It could literally just be that Adam, their dad, his vocation was to tend to creation and to watch over it, and now he's passed on the family business to his sons, and so one takes care of one half and the other takes care of the other. Perhaps the description around Cain and Abel is really just how to differentiate between the two. But we don't know. What we do know, Eve had two sons, and that both of them were taught to worship, because both of them offer a sacrifice. We don't know the nature of it, as if we know a little bit about what they offered. One offered animals and the other offered some levels of fruits and vegetables. We do know that Abel's offering was received, but Cain's was not. And there's all type of speculation as to why, but that's not really part of the passage. All of the speculation comes afterwards. Some say that Abel offered the best and Cain offered what was left over. We don't know for sure. Some people would say that perhaps Cain had a moral flaw. None of that is listed in the scripture. All it says, Abel's offering received, Cain's rejected. And to some degree, Cain's offering rejected is really secondary in the story. What's primary in the story is his reaction to rejection. That's what's most important in the story, because what Marjorie read for us is Cain became angry. The way the wording describes it is that his face fell. Cain was not rejected, it was just his offering. And so Cain was angry, and either his anger is at God or his anger is at himself. We don't know. And so typical to the Genesis narrative, God asked questions. And the questions was not for God's sake, but really for Cain's sake. But not all, in this story, what's a little different than, say, Genesis 3, is that God asked questions to Cain, but he also gave Cain options of what to do. And the meaning behind that is that Cain had a choice. That he wasn't fated to sin. He wasn't fated to failure. He could choose to do good. He's capable of faithfulness, because part of what God gave him was a warning that if he didn't do well, there's something lurking behind a door like a hungry animal ready to pounce on its prey. In Genesis 4, sin is not the breaking of the rule as much as it is an aggressive force ready to ambush. Something that's larger than Cain, lethal. Actually, the way the wording describes it is that it lusts for Cain. But the central issue to the story is, how will Cain deal with his anger? Deal with his rejection? Maybe even his depression? And even his rage? He has two options. He can take that and point it outwardly, and it ends up being a destruction to relationships. Abel is not even part of the conversation. The conversation is between Cain and God. But for Cain, he points it outwardly. You know, anger is a reaction to things that you don't like. But anger has power. Because what anger wants to do more than anything else is justify the rage or the rejection. And it is a destroyer of relationships. Y'all heard the story. Cain took his anger out on his brother Abel. Murder. And then the conversation switched back to God and Cain again. See, God and Cain, they are the point. They are really the people in the story. Cain offered excuses, which we often do. Am I my brother's responsibility? It's not my responsibility to pay attention to other folks. But see that inside of the whole picture of Genesis. What God desires for people is to be together, to be in connection, in harmony, in unity. And like his parents, Cain altered what was God-given because he chose to meet it with self-interest and out of self-centeredness. Cain could not see anything other than himself. He couldn't see himself in that relationship with God as the primary reference for who he is, and how that reference then becomes the means to treat everyone else. There's a reason why I'm retelling you this story. Your life has so many similarities to Cain's in the passage. Like Cain, you come from a family that worships. To whatever degree, you're here today. And it's not your first time. Which means to some part of your life, worship was a characteristic. Also like Cain, life will seem unfair. It will. And the many times that it does, it's difficult to pinpoint why. It just is. There'll be times where you will perceive you are not getting what you deserve. And there will be equally times where it seems like other people are also getting something more that they don't deserve. And it'll be hard to put your finger on why you feel what you feel. And like Cain, anger can be a response. And sometimes to the point to where it will seem like your face even falls. And also like Cain, what you do with your anger, that matters most. Like Cain, you have the potential to do well, which has its own set of consequences. But also like Cain in the story, you have the potential to not do well, which equally has its own set of consequences. What's not up for debate is there'll be times where life seems like it's unfair. What you do with that, anger does not have to be the last word. I hate to admit this, but I'm going to have to quote Kirby Smart. Now, I did this in the 9 o'clock, and I was told by two different people, so let me give it the reference. Kirby borrowed it from somebody else. And it wasn't Bruce Pearl, which I wish it was. I was at a luncheon, many of you were there on Tuesday, and Kirby was talking about how he interacts with some of the players at Georgia, and he constantly tells them to stay green. Because if you're green, you're growing, you're maturing. But if you're ripe, you rot. And so there's something about constantly growing, and the way you constantly grow, the way you constantly mature, it has everything to do with looking inside of yourself and what's going on there to dig up the surface of your life for why you feel what you feel or why you do what you do. Because it is so easy to not do that and then say it's everybody else's problem, not mine, which was the issue for Cain. That temptation still exists when life is not fair. There will be opportunities for you to blame another person, to point your frustration, maybe even your rejection or anger, whenever they happen, to point it outwardly. And in doing so, it's one step beyond a decision that will be filled with regrets. the best part of the story, if you do well, which means you have the capacity to do so. You want to stay green, constantly grow. The good news is that God didn't reject Cain. People often say, well, he has a mark. The mark is not freedom from the results of his consequences and his decisions, but it's actually a mark of grace. So that everywhere that he traveled, people would not harm him. It was a mark of protection as much as it was a mark of grace. The next 4 to 5 years, you will have more choices in that span of time than the summation of your life up until now. And some of those choices you can use to choose to grow, to do the hard work to mature. All of you are gifted in your own way. But there's something about life that if you don't balance your giftedness with your character, sometimes your giftedness becomes a burden. So what we want to do is grow. What's true in you, true in the passage, and true in all of us in this sanctuary, is we have a God-giving yearning for connection. Connection to God, connection to other people, and there's something about us that longs for that connection. But there's also a temptation. Will I fulfill that yearning in self-centered ways, full of my own interests? And in doing so, sometimes we become like Cain. But if you stay green, and if you allow God to be a part of that, that growth on the inside of who you are, that identity, that nature that's God-given, you'll find yourself balancing your giftedness with a character. We have a great many similarities to Cain in the passage, but they just don't have to be the things that destroy you. So you want to stay green and grow. Your everyday choices might seem like they're minuscule. They are not. Because your everyday choices begin to form over time who you are and what you become. And they will impact your relationships, your relationship with God, and also your relationship with other people.